I'm gonna get you pregnant.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is. It's Craig here from Chop Knives with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives to do Knife Talk this week, which we do every Monday for you. Every Monday morning, you'll find us in your podcast and app. We're normally joined by Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts. Unfortunately, he can't make it today, so you're stuck with just the rough two. Just us two, I'm afraid. But we're going to have some fun, aren't we, Jeff?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. We got the best listeners in the game. The best listeners in the game. So I'm fired up. How are you doing, my man?
I'm good. I'm good. A little bit of a sniffle, a little bit of a cold, but I'm fine. It seems if everybody's got it again. But no, I'm good, actually. Good. Been doing some handle work this week, which has been quite nice. Making up some nice handle blocks and so on. So that's been good. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. We've got my wife's birthday coming up on the weekend.
Oh, nice.
And it's Mother's Day over here as well. So sort of a double bubble coming up. Yeah, it's all good. I can't complain. Really can't.
Do you have any plans that you normally do for Mother's Day?
Well, we don't normally do anything, but this time we are. So Amy's parents, they live over here in France as well, but they're going back to the UK for like extended time next week. So we're making the most of it and getting them to babysit for the weekend.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to this, like, we're staying in like a treehouse for a couple of nights. It's like luxury. It's like two floors. It's got like hot tub and all the rest of it. It's quite, you know, it's in this cool place around here. So we're going there so for her birthday and for Mother's Day. So yeah, looking forward to that. We go Saturday morning. So that'll be cool. Something I've never really done before. So yeah, that'll be good. And the weather's changing. It's getting up to sort of 19, 20 degrees now, which is, you know, T-shirt weather. So it's all good.
Well, today, actually, as we're recording, today is opening day of baseball. This is a big day for baseball fans. This is like Christmas Day for baseball fans.
Yeah.
So this, as we are recording, that the Yankees are playing their first game at Yankee Stadium with the Brewers. But what's interesting enough is one of the guys I make dives for has been in the news. His name is Christian Petroni, and he's in the news because he designed these desserts at Yankee Stadium that are like taking over sports news. So what they for years and years and years, these stadiums sell like a dessert in like a miniature version of a batting helmet. I don't know if you've seen it, but you know what I'm,
I haven't seen it, but I can imagine.
So it's a bowl that looks like a batting helmet, and it's got the logo on the front. So it looks like, so if you were holding it upside down, it's not a cup. It looked like a little hat for a little cap for like a doll or something. Yeah. And then they serve ice cream in it. Well, my guy Christian, who I make forks for, he does a lot of videos and he uses my knives. He uses Tomer's knives, and he designed this tiramisu. You know, tiramisu is like it's like espresso like. Mousse.
Italian pick-me-up.
Right. Yeah. It's an espresso mousse with, like, lady fingers and then espresso mousse. And he designed it in this cup. So people are – and it's the talk of the town, this fucking dessert that, frankly, you couldn't get me to eat at a baseball game just because I'm a adult. But it's amazing and it's hilarious. And I ended up – funny enough, I went to drop knives off at my photographer in New York who took the photographs of the tiramisu in the baseball cup cap that's all over the news in the United States. So it was this kind of neat little, you know, knowing the people involved in this kind of neat little great story.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, and speaking of your handles, on the new last episode of Knife Full Blast, I interviewed Kay Foy. Do you know who Kay Foy is?
I've seen the stuff. I've heard her mention. Have you done an interview with her in the past?
No, I never had her on in the past. And what's amazing is her method of making handles.
I deflected quite well then, didn't I?
What'd you say?
I deflected quite well then, didn't I?
Don't worry about it. It's fine. You did a good job. The way she does her handles is different than anybody else. So what she'll do is she'll take these objects that she has stabilized, and she'll actually take the blade, the finished blade, and then she'll glue these objects on. And then it's almost like she's composing a collage. And then she ends up sealing it and doing all these different things. But it's the most unique way I've ever seen of anyone put halos together. It's really, really quite amazing. So I just had her on. And Luke, we're trying to itch and scratch our way through the spring. It's like business is weird. And I've been hearing about it from a lot of people. So
it's that funny time of year, isn't it? Where, you know, well, festivities hopefully. Are over. It's not quite summer and nobody's celebrating it yet. It's a weird one. Yeah.
Well, hopefully that's it. And it's not just like people are freaking out about the economy and they're just kind of holding tight. Yeah. So, we're just like scritching and scratching and just clawing our way. And honestly, I like being in a position of feeling like a underdog and I don't take anything for granted. And, you know, I pull up my belt and austerity measures and, you know, we're doing whatever it takes to kind of make sure that everyone is paid and everyone does a good job. So, you know, I'm trying to be more like Winston Churchill, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, we shall fight them on the beaches. But no, you're right. It just seems like bad news every day at the moment, doesn't it? You know, regarding, you know, the economy and just the state of the world. But we're here to give everybody a break from that, I think.
Damn right.
Yes.
Knife talk, yes. Goddamn you. And actually, and if you listen to the end at the after show, I'll tell you about my doctor's appointment.
The old gloved finger is back.
I know. I didn't get a gloved finger. That's what I got.
You went in dry and naked. Oh,
no. That's what
Rest
John,
deep.
I had what a lot of older men have that you're probably due for soon. It's called a...
Well, your finger up the ass, isn't it?
No, it's not called a finger up the ass. It's called a colonoscopy. It's not a finger. It's about 2 feet of cable. So it's a big difference. Okay. So I'll tell you all about it the after show. So we have a lot of work to do. We have incredible audio messages from the greatest listeners on the planet. All you other Fleabag podcasts, you don't dare have as good a listeners as ours. And we have great questions. We have incredible feedback. We have a lot of feedback in regards to what we talked about last week with NARPs and knife words for NARPs and all that stuff. We got to get a lot to it. So let's get to it.
Okay. Before we do,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Get on it. Okay, we've got questions. So if you've got any questions for us, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us those questions and we shall add them to the list. And Jordan Fry has done exactly that. It says, hey guys, I've been listening for a while and you keep me entertained and teach me while I'm in the shop. One question I have is, how do you stabilize your knife handle scales? Thanks for all the advice, Jordan.
Good question.
Good question. Yeah, I think we've both done a fair bit of stabilizing, haven't we? So
yes.
why don't you start, Jeff?
Well, I've learned a lot. I think you started stabilizing before I did. So I'd like to hear your method and then we'll kind of talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. And mine has changed over time. You know, hearing back from you doing stuff and, you know, learning off each other. It's all good. But yeah, I bought a really sort of basic, it was basically a kit. So you get the chamber and you get the vacuum pump all in one. And it's like a really thick Perspex chamber. So yeah, you put your resins in there. I was using
the resins,
not resins. Oh, Jesus Christ! I can't even think of the word.
The cactus juice.
No, I don't use cactus juice. I'm trying to think what it's called.
Stabilizing fluid.
Yes, whatever you want to call it. It's a stabilizing fluid. The one I was using was plant based. So there's no sort of nasty chemicals in it, particularly for kitchen knives, you know. So you submerge your handle materials in that. I like to let it soak for a while. And what you'll normally find is that because the type of wood you want to stabilize is generally quite porous, so it's got lots of air within. If you think of a sponge, so if you try to put that into a liquid, it'll just want to float. So I just got some bolts and so on, and I just sort of zip tied those together with some washers as a weight, just to weight them down. Huh. So that So they're weighed down. They're not going to float. And just leave that for a day or two. Just let it soak. There's no big rush. Just let it soak. Then turn on the vacuum machine. And just let that go for a while. And we've talked about this in the past. It depends where you are in the world as well, with regards to how much suck you can get from your vacuum machines.
Hey, yo.
Weirdly. But just let that go, and you'll see all the air being drawn out of the of those pores. And what will happen then? It'll be flooded with the resins or whatever stabilizing fluids you're using. Keep that going for a while. You'll see when it sort of dies down. But what I like to do then is, when you turn off your vacuum machine, again, just leave things in for a couple of days. There's no real rush. And then take it out on paper towels and let it dry out. What a lot of people do is they weigh before and after. And I know if you send your blocks off to be stabilized at certain places, they'll do it by weight as well.
Right, charge you by weight. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's always quite interesting to see how much the weight changes. But generally, it's going to be those sort of lighter woods that, I say, have got lots of air. They are sort of porous. That'll do best from stabilizing. But Jeff, well, I mean, if you've got any secret techniques.
First of all, I want to apologize because I think you're right. I think resins is the correct word.
I think so, yeah.
I think it is right. So I apologize. I learned a lot from you because I saw you did it in the most economic way at one point. I saw you had the resin chamber, and I remember this. You had like a little tiny cup inside.
A vase, yeah.
So yeah, a little tiny cup inside. And yeah. I was like, he is stabilizing the least amount of fluid possible. It was so smart. I was just like, man, that is a strong move. But what I do is I use my Even Heat and I dry the wood out. The first time I ever had anything professionally stabilized, I sent stuff to K&G, which is in the United States is one of the best. And one of the great things about K&G is they're in Arizona. And it's very, very dry. So what they'll do is they'll actually dry your wood out. They'll put it up in the rafters at wherever their shop is. And it's so dry that it dries out completely.
That's a good point, actually. I've got a drying chamber as well, which I put all my wood in as soon as I get it and cut it. It's in a drying chamber. So it's just temperature controlled. I've got stuff that's been there for years now. Always dry out as much as you can before stabilizing.
Obviously. Because it screws it up. Because all of a sudden, if there's like liquid inside, it screws up. The resin won't harden.
Yeah.
That's
another reason for using a smaller chamber within your chamber. So basically, chambers are normally big cylindrical things, and they'll take, maybe a few gallons of resins. I was using a glass vase inside, which is only just bigger than the scales or the blocks that are going in. Because if you do get any sort of natural oils and stuff coming out of the wood when it's being sucked, you're only contaminating that little bit of resin, not your huge chamber.
Right.
It's another reason to try and maybe use smaller chambers. You want dry wood, yeah.
So I'll take wood and then I'll mill it down. But when I mill it down, I don't mill it exactly. I once tried to mill stuff exactly, and that's problematic. You want to give yourself a little bit of material.
Yeah.
So like I don't mill down to scales. I'll mill down the blocks to make a scale. And then I'll put it in the Even Heat for 200 degrees Fahrenheit, and then I'll let it go overnight. And what happens is that you can tell when it just got it gets dry, and it gets very dry. And then I have a little moisture meter, and I make sure that it's it doesn't register, and I'll do like 24 hours sometimes. Like I say, I said a couple episodes ago, I try to do a lot of stabilizing in the winter when the shop is very dry, because that's kind of important too. So if you dry your wood out in your oven and then you take it out, there's a very good chance that once it's dry and then it gets into a very moist environment, it could just kind of suck up some of that ambient moisture.
Yeah.
And I put it in the chamber. And what I'll always do is, so I'll weigh it down. The chambers I got are from Turntex, which is the guys who make the cactus juice. And there's like a little plastic thing that it'll make sure that you're underneath your resin. And then what I'll do is, once I pour all the resin in, I'll take a piece of tape and then I'll mark on the tape the level.
Yeah.
And what I'll notice is the longer you let it soak without turning the vacuum pump on, you'll notice that it a lot of there is a lot of displacement. A lot of air leaves, and then a lot of your levels go down without the pump on. So I would think that if you just left it long enough, you could probably not. I mean, you're months and months and months. You could probably stabilize without having a vacuum pump. But at the same time, I mean, that's probably asking for trouble.
Yeah.
So I usually leave it at least a week, and I try to make sure that I'm not in a rush to stabilize, because that's when the problems happen. And I don't really have many problems. I also pick the certain types of wood are better to stabilize than others. Like you were saying, very porous wood, light wood. I feel like it takes on a lot of material, but so when you're looking at the levels, depending on the wood, you're going to have different levels of after, you know, it all sucks down. Turn on the vacuum, and then I let it go until there are no more bubbles. And then I'll let it soak at least a few days to a few weeks after I've turned off the vacuum, after there are no more bubbles. And I have noticed an extraordinary difference. If you pre-soak before you turn the vacuum chamber on, I've noticed you end up getting a lot more. And I don't have any kind of scientific data, but I definitely get a better result and there's less res in the chamber when it's all done the longer I spend soaking and then
What was the phrase? Deep soak. Yeah.
It's deep soak, long suck, big dry.
There we go.
Big dry. So then you then I got one of those. I don't like to use there's these oven tamers or these little machines that you can put into your little toaster oven. And the problem is toaster ovens are not great. I don't think toaster ovens are good for tempering, and I don't think toaster ovens are good for the resin is always usually heat activated. So once I'm ready and I'm ready to go, I'll wrap up the wood in aluminum foil and then I'll put it back in the oven. Now I used to use because it's a very specific temperature. The oven tamers are great, except for the fact that when you use those toaster ovens, those heating elements at the top just go full blast until the whole ambient temperature of the oven is a specific temperature. The problem is it fucking blasts past where you want to be, and then all of a sudden it's like it's hotter than you expect it to be. That's why I don't like using those ovens at all. I think that they're not, I mean, even heat, you want 200 degrees, it gets you to 200 degrees. So I do this the sealing in the even heat too, and then it holds it at 200 degrees for... The one thing that people don't realize is when you're putting the stabilized wood into the oven, you have to think about it like a cake. The bigger your cake, the longer it's going to take. And that's the same thing with sealing the stabilized wood. Is if you put a pile of stuff in the oven, it's just going to take more time. It's an exchange of temperature between the oven and whatever you're putting in there. So the more you got in there, the longer it's going to take. So that's the one thing is just let it go and don't mess with it. And
yeah. Yeah, it's not particularly difficult. You just got to have the equipment.
It's trial and error.
And time.
Yeah. That's the biggest issue I think that people have. It's like you think you got to kind of go ahead. You got to have to – it has to be stuff you do it ahead of time. Like you don't want to be on a deadline and then you have to stabilize something in days. That's where you can kind of make problems, and problems are what you want. And I get better results from like – wood that's very tight and it doesn't take as much resin than I do. Like the really kind of like I did a guy wanted he had a his father had a cabin made out of pine, and he gave me a piece of the cabin, and it was like, I mean, this fucking thing was it went from like light to super duper heavy, and I was just like, this thing's kind of crazy. Didn't go great.
Generally sort of oily woods don't stabilize too well either. Because they're generally denser anyway, because they don't have so much air in them, because the oil fills up that gap. But what you will find sometimes is you'll get a better finish on the wood as well, because you've got this sort of glossy stuff that you can buff up a bit more, you know?
Right.
So I did a lot of stuff with walnut for a particular restaurant. And walnut's really, really dense anyway. And I was in two minds whether to stabilize it. But I'm glad I did, because the extra benefit you got was the finish was so, so much nicer.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the hardness. It's actually, it gives you a nicer finish too.
Depending on the type of walnut. Like,
exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a very, like the figured walnut we use is very tight. It doesn't have like, it doesn't have like a lot of like splinters, some kind of, walnut has like a lot of gaps and that gives splinters and stuff. The figured walnut, tight figured walnut doesn't do it. So it really does buff up nice. And once it's stabilized, it really does give you a better situation. Look at us. Look at us.
As if we know what we're talking
Holy
about.
Holy mackerel.
Thank you, Jordan. Good question.
Next question comes from our man, Fox River Blades. Fox River Blades is our guy. Hey, KTP, I have a question that I think would be interesting to discuss. What are some business strategies that other industries use that we could adapt to help us? For example, maybe a rewards program. If you buy a certain amount of dollars worth of knives, you get a free knife, merch, or free stuff. There would have to be more thought about margins and stuff like that, but I'd love to hear what you guys think. Sincerely, Drew Peacock.
Drew Peacock.
Drew Peacock. That's a great question.
I struggle with things like this because I think it's a bit of a race to the bottom as soon as you start doing that, because somebody else will do a better offer, you know. And if that's what enticing people to get your stuff is, some sort of offer or some sort of incentive, they can be incentivized by others just as easily, I think. It's a difficult one. I'm a big sort of fan of sort of standing by your stuff and sort of selling your story, I think. I think that's sort of unique selling point about us as makers who make a lot of things by hand. The unique selling point is us and our sort of story, our journey to get here and how we make, because we all make slightly different as well. So I think that's that sort of unique selling point, really. And I think that sort of reward system, I don't know. I think you can do that without having to sort of have, you know, a, this is our commercial reward system. I think if somebody buys a few things from you, you chuck something else in extra, or a T-shirt or something like that. You know, you don't have to make a big fuss about it as such. But I think trying to hook people in with some sort of reward or program of some sort, I don't know.
I think what we're selling is a little too. It's not like, I love this question, and I think Fox River's down the right path. What I love about this question is thinking about things not from what other knife makers say, because when you listen to other knife makers, they could steer you down this path of obscurity, frankly. And I think that the thought of thinking about what other industries do and how we can adapt those ways of selling our product, I think it's great. And I think it's smart. And I think that more people should start to think about that. The problem is, and it's not a problem, it's thinking about, well, how do those things work? Like, we have a sandwich shop, and then if you buy a certain amount of sandwiches, they give you one free. Or the place I get my propane filled. If I bring my tanks over 10 times, I get the 11th free. Those are, you know, $20, $15. But when it comes to a knife, it's harder to get people to think about long term in terms of, if I buy 10 knives, then I get the 11th free. So even though it's a great idea, it's thinking about ways. Well, what are some easy ways? Because we thought about that too. At one point, we were talking about doing some sort of program, a specialized, like almost like to looking at our best customers and giving them almost like a special gift card. And I found it to be too difficult for people to kind of remember or think about. So what we've been doing lately, and this has changed since I first started making knives, and a lot of it's because we're just looking at numbers, we're looking at sales numbers as opposed to, itemizing every knife that we sell. And what we've been doing is a lot more sales, and we've been generally having really good responses with the sales, and not put in the promo code and you get this. We like now are finishing off the end of the month is we've had 10% off the end of for March, and we've been getting good results. And our business did great when we did a big Black Friday sale, and we just kept it rolling for a while. So I think it is very good to think about what other industries are doing and figuring out what ideas can work for you.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I suppose you just need to be creative with it, you know? Yeah, and it's hard to think of something that would fit. I mean, because what we do, you know, they're quite high value,
right,
aren't they? So, you know, the classic buy one, get one free, that kind of thing, doesn't really work
for what we do. No.
So it's being creative, coming up with something slightly different. But yeah, that sort of traditional, I don't know, the reward system, I don't know, it just seems a little bit sort of, I don't know, dated and a bit murky maybe.
Well, I think that there are ways in which you can be personal to your customers. And what I try to do is especially if I see a customer's name come up that I'm like, this dude is buying more knives. That's unbelievable. I'll just write a note and throw something in. Like, I'll throw in a hat or throw in a shirt. Or I had a customer who bought just a giant amount of knives. And then I made something and I thought to myself, oh, this is the same color pattern as the knives he bought. Just go send it to him. And it was like this, you know, just a nice gesture of thinking that like you're getting special treatment as opposed to everybody gets this. So I think that there are ways in which you can cultivate your customer base and not just be so prescriptive in terms of, oh, you didn't get the last one. Just send something nice. I think that the be on the top of someone's list is just to be generous. And you don't have to go crazy. And the thing is like, I hate merch because it's such a goddamn pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But like, it's very relatively inexpensive if you buy it and you're supporting local business. But I mean, throwing in a hat that cost you $5-7 to make to a customer who's good for a few grand is a very, very inexpensive, nice gesture that they'll remember you.
Agreed, yeah.
You know, yeah. I think that's really big. I think personalized generosity. I think sales are great. I think that also if you have a newsletter, having a special sale just for your newsletter people and don't tell people on Instagram, that's real nice. And you might have a way of which to just kind of push someone over the edge to buy something, which is, you know, in this day and age, that's all we try to do.
It's the goal, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really think that Fox River is smart. I think that that's what more knife makers should be doing. I think when you get into this whole, I make what I want and they're there to buy it and having an adversarial relationship with your customer is a loser long term. It might be good short term, it's a loser long term, guaranteed. Mm. We talked about that last episode, right?
I think so, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it comes up regularly, that kind of thing. Okay, I want to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. We talk to them every week because Lawrence is great there. Everything we mention on the show, basically he has it in stock. He always does. He's the one-stop shop for knife makers with steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and a lot more. Always has a special offer with belts, abrasive belts. If you buy 10, you get 10% off and all that kind of thing. Go take a look, maritimeknifesupply.com. And Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go take a look. Where are we? Paul Janzin, our gold star listener. Okay.
He's the man.
What's it? Craig's finished blade tempering, which we talked about last week, made me wonder, if you temper a straight finished blade, is there any risk of it coming out warped? So let's have a look. Craig's finished blade tempering.
So you chim tempered some knives last week.
If you temper a straight finished blade, isn't there a risk of it coming out warped? I think there's always a risk if you apply any sort of temperature to it, but the warp generally is going to come from the quenching period because you get a massive cool down, and that's where, you know, if it hasn't been ground evenly or for whatever reason hasn't been normalized, it can then sort of, you know, bend, you mean more material on one side or whatever it may be. Generally, when you're tempering, we're using temper to shim straighten stuff, so it does obviously have an effect. But yeah, I haven't really had any major problems with tempering with warps. What about yourself?
You can definitely warp something by grinding. I've definitely ground something unevenly, and then I'm taking more mass off of one side, or it's warmer on one side, I'm taking more mass off. And as it cools down, it constricts, and then there's a, that's, I think that a lot of people need to understand that, you know, the way steel heats up and it cools down, you know, it's like if you have a stuck, if you have a stuck pickle jar or something like that, you put it under hot water and it expands, you can open it up. You know, as you heat steel up based on what it is, one side gets hotter than the other, that expands, and then as it cools, it contracts in that, in, or it cools down that position. And then what I learned when I was in a metal shop was I was warping these railings with a stroke sander, which is just basically a grinder. And my boss told me, just flip it over and do it to the other side. And I did the exact same thing on the other side, and I pulled it right back. So one of the things, especially when you're grinding, is if you can focus on not just staying on one side, do one side and then the other side, one side and the other side, you have the ability to warp and unwarp and fix and repair warps with heat. And I think that you could probably, I think that, I think, I'll tell you one thing is if you were to put your knives in a, somehow, you know, on the bottom of your kiln when you're heating it, you could, if it's one side's hotter, if like, if you put a knife to temper in a toaster oven and in the bottom heating element, it heats hotter than the front, there's a good chance you could warp
in
a temper.
You would then,
you could warp in a temper. I think you got to just be, that's one of the reasons why when we use the even heats and we're heat treating, we're not heat treating where everything's flat on the bottom of the kiln. You're trying to keep everything up and even. And then even when you're putting your knives in the oven to heat treat, you're trying to keep them as even as possible in the middle. So you're getting even on both sides because, yeah, that mass and heat and mass and steel kind of plays games a little bit.
Yeah,
for sure.
For those who don't know, actually, so maybe some people doing all their stuff in a forge or then in little electric sort of ovens, toaster ovens. If you get an even heat, or I'd imagine any of the big brands will probably do them now, you get these little fixtures and the little ceramic fixtures, and you get these little sort of ceramic pegs. So it's almost like a toast rack.
Imagine
like an old fashioned toast rack. So you can put your blades in that way. So they're upright. They should be getting even heat either side. And that should help. But yeah, I can imagine if you're not using one of them, as Jeff just said, if you just lay a knife down on the bed of a kiln, you're probably going to get some issues.
I once heard somebody who was talking on a podcast talking about how stainless steel warps when you grind it. And this to me sounded like someone who's just never been in a fabrication shop before. You know, when you're welding, you know, you weld something up, as soon as that you're welding two pieces together, and if you don't clamp things down, as the weld cools down, it contracts and pulls whatever something up. So you got to always kind of compensate for that. And there are ways in which you just kind of, you know it when you see it, especially, you know, a lot of it comes from experience. You know, when you're a welder, I welded a railing up once and I didn't clamp it down, and this fucking thing was supposed to be square and it was like a diamond by the time I was done with it. Mm-hmm. And I learned my lesson, and part of that's experience too. Part of fixing a warp on the grinder's experience too. Knowing when to use a straightening hammer, knowing when to shim temper, knowing when, what's the easiest way to do something. It all comes from mistakes and learning from those mistakes and trying to prevent more from happening.
Mistakes, I've had a few.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Why don't you tell everybody about your grinder, Jeff?
When I use a grinder, I use a Broadbeck Ironworks grinder. Broadbeck Ironworks makes great grinders. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. I love what these guys are doing, and it is a great grinder. They have awesome packages. They have fantastic attachments to make your life easier. So go to broadbeckironworks.com. We have an audio question.
Oh, let's do it.
All right, guys, listen to me.
Tune it in, turn it up, and rip off the knob.
I swear to God, you could legitimately play that anytime you want. I'm so thrilled you have that audio. So Jacob Stout sent us an audio message. He went to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where you can send us your questions, and then you can record an audio question like Jacob Stout has done. Let's see if this is going to work.
What's up, guys? Jacob from Stout's Forge here. When you're rough grinding in your bevels before the heat treat, do you have to worry about overheating the blade? Sometimes I'll get some of those temper colors on the tip, But if it's before heat treat, won't doing the quench just reset all that anyway? Appreciate the help. I'm with you.
Is that, was that like a perfect message?
Perfect. Short, explained who he was.
I mean,
yeah, perfect.
I mean,
perfect.
You can't make it up. I mean, that's what we're looking for. No, we no ums, no ahs, no beating around the bush.
How many times did he record that? Was that his like 15th take?
Jacob Stout, that's a gold star audio question. Gold star audio question. So he's pre-grinding a knife before heat treatment. He notices that he's getting the colors that you do when you heat something up too much. Maybe you hit it with the grinder too much, and then it starts to get from yellow to brown, from brown to purple. Is there? Do you feel like there needs to do something about it?
I think it's linked to the previous question from Paul Janzin about sort of heat management, I suppose. So it depends what stock you get and whether it comes sort of normalized and ready to go or that kind of stuff, I'd imagine. But if I'm roughing in stuff before heat treat, which I always do, just a little, just because it just saves on your belts and all the rest of it. I generally don't hog out like a lunatic anyway. I generally go slow. Just because these are going to be guides that you're going to be using, you know, after heat treat and all the rest of it. So, I've never really got to the point where I've been worried too much about it getting too hot. You always dip in, I basically do the same sort of thing that I do when I'm, when I'm just grinding after heat treat. But what about you, Jeff? Are you really sort of hogging stuff out and getting stuff hot?
If I'm going a little fast, like if I'm going fast, sometimes I see some color. Now I pulled up a temperature chart. So light yellow, and you're going to have to do some transfer. Light yellow is 410 degrees. So straw is around 400 degrees. And then
is that in your
Fahrenheit
units?
Yeah, and freedom height. So then brown is about 500 degrees, and then kind of yellow-purple is, closer to 590 degrees, 600 degrees. None of those are temperatures they're below, for most knives, that's all below the critical temperature.
The hardening temperature, yeah. So 500 Fahrenheit is about 260 in Celsius.
Right, so those are all, they're hot, I mean, they'll burn you. But they're not enough that it would pre-heat treatment, it wouldn't be considered even normalizing. So, like, I mean, you got to get past, the critical temperature of the knife pre-heat treatment for there to be any kind of situation. Now, I'm coming to you from not a metallurgist, but I would think that if you're hitting yellow color 600 degrees or blue or purple 600 degrees after heat treatment, then you have problems because obviously it's higher than your temperature, your temper colors, your temperature. But I would think that it's not going to be a big deal, especially if you're normalizing. It wouldn't be a big deal. I wouldn't worry too much about it. It's a great question. Just don't get it red. Don't start all of a sudden grinding on it so hard it looks like it's about to be ready to forge.
Okay, let's roll that into the next question. Right. I think they're quite linked. And that's from Roland Chalafou. And he says, hey, do you have to do normalization cycles on stock removal knives? Which I think ties in quite nicely to the last bit from Jacob.
It's like I put these questions together or something.
It is. I mean, who'd have thought?
I mean, that's why the rest of these other knife-making podcasts, they should show some respect. Because not only do we care about, A, our listeners, not only do we care about the people we interview, but we also care about the show sounding good. We're what you call organized. So the rest of you podcasts out there, you flea bags, you can pretend to be Joe Rogan Jr. and just show up stoned and be very off the cuff, but it ain't working, okay?
This is, are any of these podcasts biting? Are they hearing this?
I get tagged. And you know what the best part is? Every time they tag me, I'm still not listening. I don't care. You can tag me. You can tell me. I don't want to. You're not going to force me to listen to your podcast. You can't do it. You can't force me. All peace and love, peace and love. Everyone jump. They don't get on the ledge. Normalizing on stock removal is an awesome question because, number one, it won't hurt. That's number one. Like 1084, I used to do it normalizing. All right, so when you buy steel, now if you're buying steel from like the New Jersey Steel Baron or from Lawrence at Maritime Knife Supply or Texas Ferry Supply, a lot of times what will happen is the steel will come annealed. That means that it's already been heat treated a couple times, and my mistake. It's been normalized a few times, yeah. And then when you're normalizing, you're bringing it up to critical temperature or below critical temperature, and it's kind of relaxing everything. When you're annealing it, you're letting it cool down at a very, very slow temperature, at a very slow rate, so you are able to cut it with your bandsaw, or you hit it with your grinder. It's not the big deal. You can drill it with your drill. So it's already, most of it has already been normalized. Now, some people say, yes, you always normalize 1084, 10 series knives before you heat treat them. I have done both, and I haven't noticed a difference. I've also, when I use 52-100, I've been told that it's you're paying a little extra because it already has been normalized. But I don't see the need, if you're stock removing knife steel from a reputable source, I don't necessarily see the need to do the normalizing. The normalizing, a lot of that is for after you've been forging it and you're bringing it to high temperatures, and then you're beating the shit out of it with your hammer and you're really kind of like putting a lot of stress in it. You're just kind of re-chilling it out to the point where it's similar to when you first got it.
Yeah. I'd agree, but if you are having problems with your heat treat with regards to warping, that kind of thing, it can do no harm.
No,
to do some normalization beforehand and just see if that makes a difference for you. Yeah.
That's an excellent point. Normalizing, doing the three stages of normalizing, I usually go above the critical temperature of the steel, at the critical temperature of the steel, and below the critical temperature of the steel three times. And you can straighten it out that way. You are 1,000% right. Sometimes you can get steel that has warp in it. Like I've gotten steel bars that they're already warped before, you know, you see it and you cut your steel out and it's warped. And you might hold on to that warp. So there is normalizing can kind of take away a lot of the tension that you would have in steel that has already a tendency to be a little bit warped. So you 100%. So you can't, it's not bad. And you might not need it, or it might be good for you. Yeah. Great answer.
Okay. I'll take the next one from Ronald Handmade. If you could pull up the last emails we received from Dharma Steel, just so we can tell people about what's going on.
Oh, yes, man. Well, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ronald Handmade. Again, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and Ronald Handmade has DM'd us a question. And he says, strangely enough, I'm aware that you are not actually talking to me live when I listen to the podcast, but yes, I do set myself reminders when I'm driving to send you guys feedback or questions. So we mentioned last week about Jeff just getting this fire hose of questions almost in real time as people are listening to the podcast. But he's got a question for us this week for a change. Can heat treat foil be reused, or is it one and done consumable? I've heard both. I'd be interested to hear from Craig and Jeff in particular, because I know you heat treat large batches. I think that's the next question. Yeah. Wondering about heat treat foil. Can it be reused? I've never reused it. Simply because it comes out slightly more brittle than when it goes right in. And it's not the nicest stuff to be sort of reusing and repackaging, because this stuff is like razor blades. It's really not the nicest stuff to be using anyway. And what happens sometimes is I do that old trick, and I'm not sure how effective it is, of putting little just balls of tissue in the package as well. And the idea behind that is when it gets to a certain temperature, that will combust and burn off any extra sort of oxygen or air that's within that packet. How effective that is, I don't know, but you do get nice sort of patterns on the blade, which you grind off anyway, but it's always fun to open those packets to see what you've got. You want to make those packets basically as sort of tight to the blade as you can. When it comes out, it is a little bit more brittle, that foil. So trying to get the knife out can sometimes be a chore in itself. But then having to try and repackage that, I think it would just be it'd be a bit of a problem. And I know the stuff is expensive and it's getting more and more expensive. It's one of those consumables that I hate buying.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things, unfortunately, you're better off one and done, I think.
I wish you could reuse it, but I noticed that when I'm done, I mean, I do tear them open. And even before I tear them open, I'll see a little pinhole from where the heel of the blade is or where the tip of the knife is. And I'll definitely see that, all right, that's going to be a problem if I reuse it. I think if you figured out a system in place where it wasn't a big deal and you could remove things quickly and quietly and safely, I think they could probably be used again. I have never thrown any out because I'm convinced I'm going to use them for sculpture. Like, I really want
to. I remember years ago you said that you were keeping them all. Yes.
I've never thrown one out. I have.
You must have thousands.
Oh, thousands, yeah. I have boxes and boxes of them, and some of them are beautiful. Some of them come out really beautiful. And then I actually, for one customer, I flattened it out after I opened it up carefully, and I signed it for them, and it looked beautiful, and they framed it, and that was fun. But I want to use it for, I want to make sculpture, and then I want to use it almost like, not kind of quilting is the right word, but I wanted like, use it as some sort of out exterior material. Yeah. So I would love to use it again. I just like, to me, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And the problem is it is getting more expensive. And I've said this before and it drives me goddamn crazy, is that they used to sell it in 2-foot lengths. So you get a roll 50 feet long, 2 feet long. So when you're cutting them, you can, you know, you're trying to maximize how you cut it. Well, now they all the rolls are 20 inches. So they've taken 4 inches off the width of the foil, which completely fucks things up if you're trying to heat treat 2-inch blades. So it's like it makes everything tighter, and it's just kind of annoying, and it's more expensive than it used to be. And I've tried the stuff Tercival, what is it called? That
Cornosol like
actually
the,
I got
the green stuff. Yeah,
I got some from Maritime Knife Supply. He has it, and it is really good. But it was like a mess to use, and I was just like, you know, there was a lot of cleaning up to do afterwards, and I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure that it was as oxygen depriving as a pouch of foil. So that's the answer for that.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into it with Damasteel, we have lots of great listener feedback, by the way.
Okay.
So, yeah. But before we get to that, let's talk about our friends at Damasteel, ladies and germs. Damasteel.se for all your pattern welded stainless steel. And every year, we're hosting the DCI, that's the Damasteel Chef Knife Invitational. And we got a message from our friend Carly in regards to that and the build along. That's what they did with remember that?
The build along.
That's what they said. They did a video. They had a video. They're the greatest. And Carly does listen to this intently. So one of the things she did, Damasteel did a reel last year. And then one of these guys who works in the shop, he goes, build along. And the next guy goes next to him and goes, build along. And then I'll go, build along, build along. They sound like Muppets, frankly. You know, it was fantastic. And they're like, build along, build along, build along, build along. So the build along.
Do you know, like when you say a word so often that it just sounds wrong then? You know, and if you hear it in a different accent as well, it's like, what even is that? What does that mean?
Yeah, because it totally doesn't. I mean, if you're a civilian or a NARP, you would be like, what are they talking about? Is he saying boomerang? So the build along is going to be starting.
Build along.
April 7th, when this comes out, when you're listening to this, stop everything and go to Damasteel for the build along. And they're doing a build along and it's celebrating their 30th year. They're releasing the build along in this special format. You're going to be able to get, and I don't know where, Carly, we don't know where to receive, where you get this steel, so you got to let us know for next episode. And I'm sure that Damasteel.se or Damasteel AB on Instagram will be able to give you more information. A foot-long bar of RWL34 to create a culinary blade, plus a bonus, two by...
Build a long bonus.
Build a long bonus. Build a long bonus. A 2x2 by quarter, that's 50 millimeters by 50 millimeters by 7 millimeters, of Heimskringla to create an accompanying piece or feature to that culinary knife. Let your imagination go crazy. It could be attached or not, but it must be included in the picture. So you have to send a picture to, when you finish it off, you send a picture to dci@damasteel.com. Prizes and awards. There's going to be the Knife Talk Choice. That's where me, Craig, and Mareko have some sort of dilemma right before the whole thing starts in regards to who won or not. It's just like, it's this, frankly, it's just like...
We had this intricate voting system last year.
It's like tearing your hair out and going back and forth. It's just like, it actually is... It's painstaking, frankly, if you really want to know. There are phone calls and there are hurt feelings. I'm just kidding. There are no hurt feelings. 1 year there was.
I'm not so sure.
So it's like when you say build along, we're having like anxiety disorder. You know, this is like a fucking production. So there's going to be the Knife Talk Choice. There's Pear's Choice, and then our man, Alfredo Facipieri, is joining as a judge to award Best Mirror Polished Blade. As usual, we'll take one amazing photo of your final work and send it to dci@damasteel.se. My mistake, send it to dci@damasteel.com before Halloween, so you have time. They will also be at Blade Show, and I think Mareko and I will most likely... be there at from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. for the Knife Talk Build-Along for drinks for everyone. And I'm sure it's going to be some fun. And I think they're trying to do... Oh, you have to send a vector file of the Knife Talk...
Yes.
You have to send her a thing because she wants to make some T-shirts. And then they're doing a thing. So Carly Jenkins is the best, and the build-along is starting now, and there will be more information on how you get the steel, and just go follow along with the build-along. Build-along.
Carly, if you're listening, could you please go around the shop there and get everybody to say build-along, and I'll make a little jingle for this little bit each week.
Oh, yeah.
Build-along?
Yeah, send us a little bit. Yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. All right, so now... we have to get to our wonderful listener feedback, and some of our listener feedback is actually they're fantastic this week. And the first listener feedback is audio listener feedback from another GSL, a voice you've never heard before. Craig, you care to take a guess on who it is?
You play it, and I'll guess.
Okay. Well.
Hey, I know you didn't ask, but one quick tip from your short, fat friend Brigham. If you are in a slump and you don't want to make things, go take a class. Go take a class from somebody in person and learn something new. And it probably doesn't matter what kind of class it is. It could be knife making. It could be pottery. It could be anything. But once you do that, it gets those creative juices flowing. And we all know that we like to have juices flowing. See ya.
Do you know who that was?
Well, he stated his own name. It was BK, Burger King Brigham Kindell.
Is it me, or could that voice be the voice from Bill Murray from Caddyshack? Do you remember?
play the first little bit again.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Hey, I know you didn't ask, but one quick tip from your short, fat femme Brigham.
Possibly, yeah. I see what
you mean. A little slurring, kind of, what's going on, everybody? It's kind of like a Bill Murray situation going on.
Brigham's been on the juice already.
Come on! He did talk about the juice. You've taken classes that are not knife making, and then it's gotten you fired up, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of sort of online classes as well. I've always got a million... sort of,
but your pottery
things to go on. Exactly, we took a pottery class quite recently, and that's got me now doing pottery and use my even heat for that as well. So that's a really good point. If you're in a slump and you feel as if you're going through the motions I think just sparking something new, creating something, even if it's, as Brigham said, you know, step away from making knives and just spend a morning or even a full day, whether it could just be drawing or painting or something maybe you haven't done in years that you maybe used to enjoy or something you've just never done before. It can sometimes just really bring you out of a funk and get you going again, get you excited again.
I'm going to say something that no one's going to like.
These
slumps are like, I mean, you're obviously not busy enough if you're having a slump. I'm telling you, and I hate to be that guy, but if you're feeling like, oh, I'm not motivated, you're not busy enough. You're spending too much time not being focused on reaching that goal. We don't have that much time left. I don't have that much time left, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that, you know, there's no time for playing. The other thing is, and you guys make fun of me because I always say sometimes everything doesn't always have to be fun. You've got to be focused on the goal that you're having, unless you're like Brigham and you take your work to work and you make your knives on the boss's dime. And can you imagine this guy? Can you imagine this guy? Guy, Brigham Kindell has the world by the balls. I mean, you want to talk about a guy. The fact is his boss lets him make knives at his office desk, and he has the nerve to talk about slumps. I mean, we should play this motherfucker to his boss and tell his boss.
He's got this big pillar drill next to him, so he's on the phone taking calls.
I know.
He's yanking down this.
Can you imagine he's at work getting paid by another job, and then he's got to worry about being in a slump on his second job that he's getting paid for by his first job? Brigham, this is outrageous. You're taking this for granted, my man. Don't talk about slumps because we're going to call your boss and say, hey, your main man's in a slump. Oh, what do you say? He's not being very productive this week. Fucking Brigham.
His boss will be like, oh, he's fine. No, we don't mean that job. We mean the other job.
The one that you're paying him for that he's doing his own job with. He's not productive in his second job. He needs to figure out ways to be motivated.
You know, I don't think it's just about as in a slump, as in... like you mentioned, you're not busy enough, and you know you could be. I just mean sometimes you just there can be a lot going on,
right?
And it can be hard to motivate yourself. So you could be super super busy. There could be a lot going on, but I think mentally you're just not in the right place. And I think just stepping away, even if it's just for a few hours, and doing something that will refresh your head.
Well, how do you
often bring you back in thinking, right, I'm ready. And you may, whilst you're doing this other thing, if it's any sort of creative endeavor, it could spark some sort of thing where you could bring that into your knife making as well.
So when you're writing songs for the 355s, meanwhile, you guys have been so prolific in regards to all these incredible songs. The videos look amazing. It's just so amazing to see. What happens when the expectation is you guys got to write all these songs for an album, and you're not feeling creative or motivated?
I think that's slightly different, because I think most people who are making knives or, you know, that sort of creative endeavor, they're doing it for, you know, they need to do it financially. It's a job. So I couldn't do it in the same way. Let's say I'm writing a song, and if I'm not feeling it that day, well, it's not going to happen. You can't force it out. But, you know, you can't do that if it's your job. You need to go in, you know? Even Brigham with his two jobs, he needs to go in and force it out, for want of a better word. So I think that's slightly different, because it's the outlet is different there. But I do think that if you're not feeling it, I think go away and just refresh yourself, and I think you'll come back better.
Well, like, we were waiting on approval for a collaboration we're doing with my man Bob. Every Day's Feast Day, we're doing, I have material, or waiting, and then there's things that need to be done in order. So we're having to do other work to get ready for the next day. Like, we're going to start in full blast tomorrow on grinding these knives and start to get them ready, because we have a deadline in terms of when he's going to come down so we can start selling them. And I find myself in this position of, God, I only want to work on these, but I can't. So we have to figure out other things we can work on to make sure that our time is being spent well. So yeah. I think that that's another thing. It's like there's always something to do, even if it's not fun. I think a lot of people are looking for they're looking for glory all the time. And glory takes work. And I think that you got to get to the glory. And sometimes it's dirty work to get to glory. So, I mean, I think working through things is the move.
Having sort of worked, you know, for the man in sort of past lives, I was sort of in the tech business, I suppose. What's quite normal in that industry, particularly with big companies, they'll often say like Friday mornings or something like that. You still come to work, but we encourage you to do something else, whether that is take an online class or make something that's not related at all to what your normal job is. And I think they see huge value in that because it opens up people's mind to sort of learning more. And, you know, who knows what they'll learn that they could bring into their job anyway. And I just think it gives people, I think particularly creative people, it gives them a really sort of nice feeling of well-being then as well. That the fact that, you know, I've got this time where, it's my time. But, I mean, really it's not because you're learning something that you're giving back to the company. You're investing in yourself a little, you know?
Yeah.
And I really do think that's important. But, yeah, you don't see it in, you know, jobs outside the tech world as much, really. But it's a very sort of common thing in the tech
world. You know
world.
Who does that all the time?
Who's that?
Cormac. They're constantly doing things that are outside the norm of what the sharpening machine business. And they're constantly doing, things that are creative for the team building things, all these things to get them kind of, they're very big into kind of motivating their people in a positive way. And that's one of the reasons why I like Tormek so much is because they're very.
That's why you got 19 of them.
They have, let me tell you, the space is amazing and they have a big room for the employees to eat lunch and they have time for fika. Fika is like mandatory coffee break and they're very invested in they have a pool table and they got a goddamn basketball hoops. They're really invested in their employees and they want to get them fired up to be at work. So I would highly suggest supporting a business that is very, very supportive of their own employees, and not to mention the fact that Tormek are the best for sharpening anything. If you're a chisel man, this is the stuff for you. That's what they're meant for. But if you're a knife guy like me, I love the Tormek. I know a lot of knife makers, great knife makers, are using Tormek, and we're getting repeatable edges. You can use the jigs. You don't have to use the jigs. It's very user-friendly. Their customer service is the best, and you're getting a product that's going to last you for a long, long time. And I'm big on Tormek. So go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram, or you can check out Tormek.com and see what the fuss is about. I'm going to have Carl Friends, who is the American, one of the American guys at Tormek, who's become a good friend, and I'm going to have him on Full Blast in a couple of weeks. And we're going to just talk about other things besides Tormek, but I love this company and I love their product. So there you go.
Perfect. Do we have another audio message from Rick Elm?
We do, but we're gonna wait for Mareko because that's definitely okay. a Mareko audio message. But we have more listener feedback that I think is terrific, and it's also last week we were talking about the fact that don't be a NARP, which is in sports radio. They usually have two broadcasters and one guy will be a professional athlete and the other person will be some fat slob who just likes sports. But the fat slob who likes sports talks about sports like he knows everything. And usually what will happen is the athlete will get irritated at him and the listeners and then refer to them as a NARP. And then what a NARP is in college sports, NARP stands for non-athletic regular person. And it's to delineate between athletes and non-athletes, but it has this, you know, it definitely seems like it stings a little bit when somebody's a know-it-all and a NARP. So we asked the listeners to supply some new words for knife makers, for the knife-making world, about a NARP. So someone who is an expert on knife-making but never made knives before. So the first one comes from... First one comes from our man, J.D. Eiler. He came up with a knife maker's version for a NARP. J.D. Eiler has said, in regards to a NARP, the knife world would be a shat. Shat stands for soft hands and talentless, which I think is a little harsh, And I saved the best one for last, but I think shat is a, because you can't really say it in a, like NARP is good because you say, yeah, you NARP, you know, but
you
can't really call someone a, it doesn't feel, it feels like you're just calling them a shit. Lucky Bastard Artworks says an armchair quarterback name for knife wannabes, Fifes, F-I-F-E, Fifes, forged in fire experts. There are a lot of Fifes. Fifes is good too. Or a Fife, you Fife.
Shats and Fifes.
Shats and Fifes. We got some good ones. The last one I think might be the one. But this is still the thing. So Dale Watterson says, in last week's episode, you were looking for a catchy acronym for non-makers. Well, I know of a golf course that regularly hands out the NAGA, N-A-G-A award for bad golfers. NAGA is short for not a golfer's asshole. Not a golfer's asshole. Okay.
What?
So, I was like, what is that? What are you talking about? Not a golfer's asshole. What does that mean? What, not a golfer's asshole. I don't know. There's an apostrophe after the golfers.
Not a golfer asshole.
No. It's not a golfer's and a golfer apostrophe S asshole. Yeah. I don't know about that, but he goes, maybe you could use the word NACMA. NACMA, short for not a knife maker's asshole. I still don't get it, but I'm with you. Dale Watterson, he goes, thanks for all the content from Bricked Up in Berwick. And then Simple Little Knives, which I think has clinched it. Unless somebody else wants to send in their versions of a NARP, is Simple Little Knives says, hey guys, my suggestion for NARP is SHEP, S-H-E-P, for soft-handed everyday person or people. And I immediately, when I read it, he goes, cheers, Liam, from Liam. And I immediately thought, I could definitely say something about it. I don't need to hear another thing from your Shep ass. You know, I feel as though Shep is pretty good.
So is it soft hands?
Soft-hand everyday person. You could throw an L in there, and it could be a schlep. A schlep being soft hand, lazy, everyday person. And then you could call them a schlep. But I do like Shep. I do like a Shep. I said, I don't need to hear another word from your Shep ass. And I immediately said it, and I was just like, I'm not mad at Shep. So far, Shep is the best knife-making version of a NARP.
Yeah. And we've got a title for this week's episode.
Which is?
Shat, Sheps, and Fives.
Bricked Up in Shep. Bricked Up in the Shep. I like that. We have a complaint for you.
Oh,
and this is not abnormal.
This isn't about the ads or about the audio being too low again.
No. This one is red handed. You have no, this is you've been caught red handed and this is something you've done before. You want to take a guess what it is?
When you say red hand, is that the podcast that I've mentioned?
Well, we're in this neighborhood. You've already disturbed one more of our listeners.
Right, I don't know.
Your listening and watching recommendations are putting our listeners in therapy. So Manny Fernandez says, regarding Craig's recommendation, I watched 7 minutes of episode one of Adolescence, and it fucked me up already.
In the first 7 minutes.
Oh, dude! Wow, you must be really dark. You must be dark because Manny Fernandez, he got a cast iron stomach, and he's just like, I did 7 minutes. I'm out. You fucked me up. I need to watch Are You Being Served to cheer me up now and get my British fix. What's Are You Being Served?
Are You Being Served? It's like a 70s sitcom, very camp, very very British. Yeah. Where's me pussy?
Where's me pussy?
I can't think of the name. It was basically it was early 70s and it was set in like a clothes shop kind of thing. And there's an old Mrs. Slocum, an old lady called Mrs. Slocum, And she used to say, "Where did I put my pussy?" all the time. She had this thing with, "Oh yeah,
where's my pussy?"
It was just full of those sort of double entendres, yeah. Very 70s. But Adolescence is so good, so good.
If Manny Fernandez is out, I'm out, because my wife and I are like dangling in this like depressing mode because we just finished. That mushroom zombie movie, the mushroom zombie TV show, The Last of Us. We finished The Last of Us.
Right.
I mean, you just want to kill yourself. You know what I mean? Yeah. You listen to that and you're just like, oh my God, if the apocalypse comes, we're doomed. And then we watched the first episode of, she liked the first season of White Lotus. And then,
a lot of people are talking about that, aren't they?
Yeah, didn't really interest me because I felt like it was just some sort of pervy show. And then we watched the first episode of the third season, and I don't know, man. And then I heard about some brothers jerking off another brother, and I'm like, why do we need this in our lives? So we're done with all these, you know, the crazy part is like, you know, you want to watch the most, you know, the shows that people are watching today are disturbing, frankly. Yeah. The most popular ones are the most disturbing.
It's like everything else. They need to shock to get people to watch. But honestly, please, please watch Adolescence. At least watch the first episode. It's not one of these things where intentionally shocking. It's so real. You're there. It's real.
Yeah, but
it's...
I don't want that. I want Seinfeld or something. I need a joke because we watch The Pit, and it's depressing as hell. Because it's just like blood and people dying, and you know, just kind of like it. That's hard to watch. And then. Yeah. You know the you know one thing about the Last of Us. Did you see The Last of Us?
No.
It's great.
No. I mean, you didn't sell it well to me.
It's great.
These mushroom-like zombies. Well, I'm like, it's
great. No. It's really. I mean, it's one of the best shows on TV, and there is a ghoulish beauty to it. And the whole idea is not like zombies. It's like this cordyceps mushroom infects the brain the way I guess there's this cordyceps mushroom in real life that like latches on to like an ant or a bug, and then it like slowly replicates in the body, and it turns the bug into a zombie for the most part. And it's great. The show's great. But the problem is it's like all these like normal social morals are thrown out there. So there's like, you know, it's just fucking nonstop intense violence. So it just gets depressing, frankly. And And P.S., I watched the first episode of Game of Thrones when it came out. And then all of a sudden the brother's fucking the sister. And I'm just like, I am done.
Oh, Jesus.
I am fucking done. I don't care about your dragons and your incest. You can fucking take it. Because I ain't interested in your weirdness. It's like, are you out of your mind? What is wrong with us? All this incest is now like big news in Hollywood. I'm out. I'm watching baseball.
But even the dragons and things like that, I'm out. None of that.
I mean, it's crazy.
Stuff.
Dragons and incest. All right, that's a hit. Can you imagine pitching a show like that? Well, you and I,
the analytics are in, boys, and people are in too.
You know what's big?
Incest and dragons.
Incest is big. Incest is big in Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Our numbers are showing it. And if we throw dragons in there, you got a hit on your hands, and it's the truth.
Exactly. Yeah. Madness. But anyway, this is the last time I'll say it. Please do watch Adolescence. It's not like all these terrible things happen. It's just one little story.
You want to know? We're in the after show already. If you want to know something that happened that's fucking crazy, is there was a Knicks game, a basketball game last week, and I was watching it live. I love watching the Knicks. I love Madison Square Garden. Being in Madison Square Garden is amazing, but watching it is just you feel like a real New Yorker. So there was this, you know, they were playing, and then the camera said there was a health issue, and somebody had to be, they had to stop the game because somebody was, you know, a medical issue. And they stopped it for like 10 minutes. So I'm just like, this is so weird. They're not talking about it. They're not showing it. Nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden, Hillary's on the phone. And she goes, do you know what's going on in Madison Square Garden right now? And she shows me a picture. Do you know the comedian Tracy Morgan?
No.
Tracy Morgan's a famous comedian. He goes, I'm going to get you pregnant. You know, he's, you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Just do that again so it's isolated for the audio.
I'm going to get you pregnant. You know, he'll say something. He'll say something like that, or like, Darth Vader was my father. I'm going to get her pregnant. You know, he's great. He's, you'd know him if you saw him. Amazing. He's an amazing comedian. So apparently he was courtside. Like, he was at the closest you could be to the court, vomiting all over the court. And there's video of him, and he's throwing up all over the court. And it was like, it was just like all over the internet, because they're got the guy's got to play the goddamn game. There's vomit all over the basketball court. But it was all very funny because it was just very funny, irreverent comedian.
So did he do it on purpose for some sort of
I don't know. No, no. He was clearly, I mean, that is not something you do on purpose. I mean, he was like wearing fur coat and everything like that. He was like pimping out, marfing on. And then he took a picture of himself in the hospital, and he says, just to let you know, when I barf on the court, the Knicks win. So it's like,
yeah. And I'm gonna get pregnant.
I like it when you do that. I like when you do that. Craig's gonna get her pregnant. That's what his whole thing is. Is like, you look good. I'm gonna get you pregnant.
I wonder what his strike rate is there. Jeez.
Yeah, he's really good. He's funny.
Oh, madness.
Some Americans got that one. That it.
Yeah. Right, I need to tell everybody all about Indasa Rhino-Wet. We all know what it is by now. If you're doing any sort of hand sanding, you've got to be using Indasa Rhino-Wet. If you're not, you're a fool. And if you're not buying it from Texas Farrier Supply, you're a fool too, because we can get you 10% off. If you head to texasfarriersupply.com and use KnifeTalk10 as a promo code, you'll get 10% off your Indasa Rhino-Wet, as well as anything else in your basket there. So head to texasfarriersupply.com. They've got different sections for bladesmiths, farriers, whatever you may be. Have a look, good look at everything they've got. You can get 10% off everything with Knife Talk 10 at texasfarriersupply.com. I suppose we're in an after show already, aren't we?
Yeah.
Basically there, yeah.
So I got my balls broken because... So here's the thing. Here's the story. So when you're between 45 and 50, you should be getting a colonoscopy. You know, that's something that you should do because it's good for men's health to do it. And so
you do it quite regularly, Jeff. I'd say three times a year. You seem to enjoy it.
You want to keep making jokes? You're going to feel really bad about it when you just keep making jokes. So the whole thing is if you're all clear, you don't have to do it for another 10 years. Hmm. Well, the last time I did it, which was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, they found some things that they removed, and then they said, come back in 5 years. Well, so I came back in 5 years. And so what happens is it's actually not hard, and it's not a finger. I know that my man Sunset Forge was like sending me all these finger photos. Listen, young guys, you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Old guys, they're like giving me like the power sign. They're like, I'm with you. Good for you. I just did it, or I'm going to do it. So what happens is the hilarious part is when you go into a gastroenterologist and you say, I need to get a certain age. I want to get a, whatchamacallit. The reason why we're doing it is because, you know, we're concerned about, you know, the future of the place that my wife is working at. Mm. And we're trying to take advantage of our insurance while we can. Yeah, so Hillary's just like, you are getting everything checked. So I got my glaucoma checked again. You know, who knows what the hell I'm getting next. So what they do is they prepare you by, they get a prescription for this medicine, and what you're supposed to do is there's a lot of prep beforehand. So I went to go pick up this prescription. The woman opened up the she could barely get this gallon jug out of the window, and she handed it to me, and it's like, it was the stuff I'm supposed to drink before the night. And I said, I laughed. I turned around. I was like, I said to her, so I guess I shouldn't drink this right now. And she started laughing. I was like, no. So what you do is like 3 days before you do the colonoscopy, you're not allowed to eat vegetables. And then the next day, or you know, the day before, you have to drink this gallon of this disgusting stuff. You know, eight ounces every 15 minutes, and then you take these pills, and then you are married to the toilet for the next for the next 12 hours, you are just like, to the point where I said to Hillary, I'm like, I'm afraid to get into bed. You know, I'm afraid there's no way that my O-ring is going to be able to handle the pressure that I've been feeling lately. And you are just like, by the end of it, you are crystal clear. Like you could eat out of my colon.
I'm just
telling you, like, I am like, you are at a level of cleanliness that has never been seen in your body before. you are crystal clear.
Yeah.
Crystal clear. I mean, crystal clear. So I haven't eaten. So I did that all day. And I was supposed to, on Monday, I was supposed to interview Kay Foy at 9 o'clock in the morning after my last dose of the whatchamacallit. And I said to Hillary, I'm like, you think I'll be able to make it through this interview? And she goes, yeah, sure, you'll be able to make it in the interview. And I'm like, I'm never going to, I can't, you know, there's no editing. I can't, I mean, the O-ring ain't going to hold, you know? So I ended up.
blow a gasket at any point.
I didn't want to blow a gasket on old Kay. So I pushed her back, and then I was right to, because it was like the next morning, it was like, so now I haven't eaten any solid food for 36 hours. I'm, as my wife says, you're fucking really cranky right now. I'm like, I know, I haven't eaten anything. I can't eat anything. You know, go to the place. They put me in a hospital bed. I got to wear the outfit with your butt dangling out. They put a IV in your arm, and they're going to give you the stuff, and they're going to knock you out, and then they're going to shove 2 feet of cable up your ass, and then take a look. Crystal clear. Yeah, that's why you got to be crystal clear, because they don't want to be, they don't want any speed bumps.
Mining through that, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want any, you got to be prepared. You can't even eat, you know, you can't even have like anything red, because they're afraid of like anything red would be bad. So you're on clear liquids for a while, and they want to make sure they got you want to be scuba diving in a, you know, crystal clear a beach. You don't want to be in like some of the, you know, this little wharf, you know. So I was next to this woman who was having I was listening to this incredible, this woman was having this real drama next to me, and she was, you know, upset because she caught her husband doing something, and she's on the phone, and I'm like, this is unbelievable. I'm in my, you know, gown, and I said to my wife, I'm like, I'm texting to my wife, I said, you don't believe what I'm listening. This woman she's crying. She's crying in the bed next to me with the curtain. And I said, what should I do? She goes, don't do anything. I'm like, yeah, I shouldn't do anything. I said, I can't be consoling someone with my ass hanging out. You know what I mean? So they wheeled me in. They put in what's referred to as propofol. That's the stuff that killed Michael Jackson.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's also referred to as milk of amnesia. And I've had it now a couple times where I'm trying to see how long I can go without it taking hold. And they put it in, and the guy turns to me and he goes, have a nice nap. And I'm just like holding on, and then you could feel like
as he snaps
tingles.
His glove.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We started talking about Forging Fire because he found out I was a knife maker, and he wanted to know if I'd been on Forging Fire. I was like, no, I haven't been on Forging Fire. Now go put that thing up my ass. So you're trying to hold off. You're trying to hold her as long. You can't hold off. And then I woke up and I went home, and I was pretty fucking stoned getting to the car, and I recorded a little message for my wife. Or for my daughter.
Your daughter. I did see it, yes.
Making sure she knew I was okay. The woman next to me thought that she wasn't going to make it through the whole thing. So she called her husband to tell him how much she loved her. And I'm just like, she's just getting fucking 2 feet of cable up your ass. You're going to be sleeping. You know, don't worry. This isn't open heart surgery. So I did it, and I got to go back in 3 years. So
okay. Okay, that's good.
They found something again. They removed it, and this is part of being a grown-up. You get stuff taken off you.
Yeah.
You got to do it, dude.
I haven't had the pleasure yet, but I'm sure it's coming.
You know, here's the crazy part is, you know, people say, oh, I don't need it. I feel fine. I feel fine. But, like, I mean, you don't know. So, like, we're trying to do men's health and doing all this stuff, and it's all fun, and I get a lot of jokes, and people say, but I'm going to outlast a lot of you guys, because some of you guys are too afraid to get a fucking cable up your ass. You don't even know it's there. You're out. Milk of Amnesia.
Did they burn onto a DVD for you so you can take it home and watch
you know
later?
What? I almost thought I should see what it looks like and I should watch like a YouTube video. And I'm like, fuck that. What are you trying to do to yourself? Don't do any of that. You know, you don't need any of that shit. So.
No, best not to.
Well, there you go.
On that cliffhanger. Maybe that's not the right word, is it?
Well, I mean, you know, it was a hanger for sure.
Yeah,
it was
exactly. Like a, you know. Should we call it a day?
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to Shats, Sheps, and Fifes. We will be back again next week. And hopefully Marekka will be with us next week as well. And, so if you've got any questions for us, audio questions are good. They work well.
They work well, right?
You can do that on Instagram. So we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Go to DM us, and I think there's a little microphone there, and you can do an audio message to us. Keep it short, keep it succinct, and, yeah, we shall play
They're
it
fun.
And endeavor to answer. I think that's the show. Thank you all for listening. Bye for now. Yeah.
And I'm going to get her pregnant.
I like it when you do that. I like when you do that. Craig's going to get her pregnant.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money. Like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games. Or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.